Christian education is what you get on Warrior Connection, the Progressive Radio Network, thanks to Dr. Gary Knoll and all his incredible work. Please remember to go and pick up Dr. Knoll's documentaries that he has on his website, because they fill you in on all of this information. Today we got another incredible guest. Our guest I got to meet several years ago. We've known each other, worked together. She hosted me when I was out there giving a talk out in Pennsylvania. And our guest today is Alana Hartsog. Alana, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be on Warrior Connection.
Well, I'm really glad to have you. I mean, you're another environmentalist, been fighting for the environment and agriculture and everything for buku years. I mean, your bio reads like, wow. I mean, administrative director, United Nations, non-governmental representative for the International Union for Land Value Taxation. You're co-director of the Earth Rights Institute, international liaison for the Robert Schallenbacher Foundation. And you're the recipient of the International Earth Day Award. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you wrote a book called The Earth Belongs to Everyone. I mean, you don't get any better than that, Alana.
Well, thanks. The Earth Belongs to Everyone was a collection of my articles and essays written over a period of years, published several places, so that I needed to have all my work or much of it put into one cover. So I was pleased that it did receive the Radical Middle Book Award, and people can order it, but they can get it for free as a PDF. Just look up Earth Belongs to Everyone, and you can just read it online for free.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, you ran for Congress in the Democratic Party in 2014 out of Pennsylvania's 9th District, and also way back in 2001 with the Green Party.
That's right.
Is there anything you don't do, my dear?
Fly airplanes.
I mean, I remember when we were visiting out there, we went out back, you've got your organic garden and everything, you got the horses, and I mean, just have a good time.
Yeah, I've kept chickens here for ever since I moved in 1990. 26 years of chickens.
Wow. Well,
it keeps me sane.
So
I mean, you got to do something to stay sane in an insane world, you know. And so working with the earth and being close to nature is really helps me keep my balance and insanity.
No, I think that's
recommended
what we're
for
all
everyone.
About.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have to protect the environment. I mean, everything we talk about, Warrior Connection, we talked about the health and environmental effects of military operations all over the place. That's how you and I got together. I mean, you're so close to the Army War College, you can spit, and you've worked with those guys, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where can we go? I mean, there's so much we can talk about, and I think the idea of the Earth belongs to everyone and how we can do and how we can improve it and what we can grow and how we take care of our crops and our veggies and our gardens. I mean, it's got to be an individual responsibility, doesn't it?
Certainly the keynote for Warrior Connection, respect and education, starts with respect for the earth. And I like the phrase, how we treat the earth is how we treat each other. And if we are violent and harmful towards the earth, inevitably we are violent and harmful towards each other. And so what we are all striving for is a triple bottom line world, not just profits, but also people and planet, and not just economics, but also the environment and the equity, the fairness. And this neoliberal economic system's just got to be shown the back door and leave us forever, but that's what we're struggling against. And some years ago, I came across out of India, a political economic perspective called PROUT, Progressive Utilization Theory. That's a mouthful, but it says real progress is expansion of the human being on emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. And the utilization is we have to use these gifts of nature, the land and resources, for that goal of human conscious evolution and to help evolve all of life. And as a true higher mission, I guess, of humans on the planet to help with evolution, not impede it. But Proud also says something very important for Warrior Connection, is that it's the heart, compassionate warriors like yourself who have really thought this through, and people who haven't actively served the military but who are values-oriented intellectuals like myself. It's really the joining together of these forces that can overcome the very, I think, mentally ill to the point of so greedy for power and money. That is the few who have so much power and control. It's really a psychopath, a sociopathy in their mind state.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, when we talk about agriculture, I mean, going back to antiquity and growing your own, I mean, farming and government's been based on that, haven't they, to some extent, on how they can provide for everybody?
I think, Doug, the reason you asked me to focus in particular on this theme of farming is because I mentioned that in January at our Wilson College here in Franklin County, Pennsylvania, we have organized what we call the Factory Farm Forum because of the growing increase of the confined animal feeding operations here in our area, packing 8,000 pigs into one small area and chickens and so on, how not only damaging to the earth and the animals, but also the workers and just the whole system of factory farms, and then promoting the organic sustainable agriculture. But in terms of antiquity, I found something interesting from Evagelos Valianatos. He's a Greek guy who was 25 years with our Environmental Protection Agency, rather marginalized by it, I might say, because he was very critical of EPA policy. He has a great book called Poison Spring, and I have this slideshow in front of me that I had shown at the Factory Farm Forum in January. Now and then, if you don't mind, I'd like to just share some short quotes from it. And this is from Evagelos Valianatos. And he says, traditional agriculture was the mother of human culture and society. Small farmers raised food and created organized societies and states. In ancient Greece, small farmers invented democracy and the polis. And then he mentions that Athenian general, student of Socrates and philosopher, late 5th century BCE, he praised agriculture as the mother of all the arts and sciences and civilizations. So what I learned was it wasn't the philosophers who invented democracy in ancient Greece. It was the philosophers watching, observing, and articulating how the small farmers had organized themselves democratically. Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating. I mean, because when you look at it, you know, from growing up in a farming family and living on a farm today, I mean, that's where the fundamentals are. I mean,
absolutely. The fundamentals of, you might say, caring, sharing, right relationship to earth, plants, animals, and each other. I mean, if you live in place, you want to thrive, you want the environment and everything around you to thrive. You wanted to grow green and in a good way. We had a Reverend, Alice Malloy, working with us on this factory farm forum, and she saw that so clearly because in the 90s she was fighting one of these confined animal feeding operations, and the ones that were in her community were just polluting the land and the water and the resources and the smells and so on. It was really degrading her community, and she came to also see so very clearly that the rural areas are vital to the health of the whole society. And if you have breakdown in the rural areas, and if you have, like we have in so many of our states, enormous monoculture, big agribusiness with lots of chemicals, lots of pesticides and herbicides, that's a death culture. That's a bottom line of profit only, Doug. So this is why this growing sustainable agriculture and community sort of support agriculture movement is absolutely essential, and it's really part of the good news of our time, something that we can do. We can support local growers, local farmers, and growing food in our own backyards or on our balconies if we live in the city, which I used to do in San Francisco and Oakland.
Yeah, when we think about these massive farms and everything, farming operation, whether it's a hogs or whether it's cattle or anything, I mean, you're talking about several hundred animals being confined in an area not much bigger than a basketball court or a football field.
Oh, you're underestimated. Several thousand, my friend. Thousands.
Okay, several thousand. Well,
yeah.
I mean, trying to handle the sewage and all the other diseases and the disease sharing and everything else that comes around. So we've got all of this problem with just how do we get rid of all of the waste products from the animals, but then you've got
the waste,
all the disease organisms that are going nuts.
It might be contained for a while, but, you know, some rural areas don't really have good rules or regulations about containing those manure lagoons. And if there's flooding, man, you got it right running into your water, your streams. A lot of people on wells in the rural areas, and you got fish killed. I mean, that happens, too. So anywhere you got this really big concentration, you're going to have a lot of problems. But, you know, doesn't the concentration really starts with how we really have our economy that concentrates wealth into the hands of a handful of multi-billionaires and millionaires, the so-called 1% or 1/10 of 1%. That's really what we're up against. And it's thinking through the baselines for an economic democracy and pull us out from what we have now, which, if you think about it, we really have founded a political democracy, but never had an economic democracy. We brought the land tenure and the banking system pretty much straight over from Europe when this country was colonized, first with the land grab of native people. And we have to examine those fundamental structures of land tenure and how we have the money system set up, because it impacts agriculture, which is our basic needs, and how that control system is in the hands of the few.
Doug, Kevin, I'll jump in here just a second. Ilana, my name's Ray.
Yes.
I'm with Doug on the show and a co-host, and I was listening to you, and, you know, I live in North Carolina. We have a lot of farmlands here, and we have a lot of hog farms. We have a lot of...
Yes, you do.
And we have runoffs and all these things, a lot of chemicals in the air. We have a lot of cancer in this state, and people have always, you know, at least tied it together with the different chemicals in the air, the soil, the water, those type of things. And I'm dealing with, you know, Agent Orange right now. I've dealt with it for 45 years, but it's really come out more, and I have, now they told me I had some skin cancer, and so it came from the, you know, defoliants and the things they used. But I think it's the world population that demands so much food, they're not worried about the future, they're worried about today. And when you do that, you get real careless with a lot of things, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Well, North Carolina is important in my mind because the maps I've seen that pinpoint those swine operations, are they not surrounded by a lot of African Americans? Don't a lot of African Americans live in those communities?
That's true.
Okay. Now, I live very near to where Thaddeus Stevens had a blacksmith shop, and he was a powerful Civil War congressman from South Central Pennsylvania, strong abolitionist. And after Civil War, he was a major proponent of land reform.
Okay.
During Reconstruction, that was the 40 acres and a mule. All right?
Yeah.
Now, had in your area, some of the plantation owners, they just fled from their lands during the war.
Right.
And then there was a general that did give some of the freed people land in the area, but that only lasted so long until it was taken away from them again. Had we had the 40 acres and the mule for the freedmen and the poor whites in the South, it would be a totally different culture. It would be what Thomas Jefferson envisioned as a yeoman-based democracy based on small holdings.
Okay.
And that is really the undiscovered revolution in American politics today, the need for land reform, the need to revisit that conversation. And how that conversation ended, I found out from looking at history books, was that the northern factory owners said, if we allow people in the South to have land rights and direct land access, our factory workers might get the idea that they deserve that as well. And if it started in the North, then we would lose, essentially our wage slaves.
Right.
So again, we have over the centuries, really, the kibosh put on progressive reforms by the few who own and control so much of the land and resources. But that situation that you're dealing with, how is it going to end unless somehow there is probably going to come down to direct actions combined with clarity about a way forward? In our, in my congressional district in Indiana County, Pennsylvania, in the small rural township of Grant, get this, it's starting to be national news. The township supervisors have passed a resolution, first a home rule charter, first in the country based on rights of Mother Earth. And now they have passed a resolution that says they will not arrest or fine people for direct action against this fracking corporation that wants to put a deep frack wastewater injection well in their community. And if that injection well would ever break, which they do break, and they are causing earthquakes, it will destroy the water quality for those rural people who are on wells. So this is going to be a stand that some of us are preparing to take if we need be for direct action. Somehow we, the people, have got to be able to start pushing back these power profit mongers that have way too much control.
Exactly.
Do you agree?
Well, one of the things in North Carolina is they're selling, they've done this for years, is they've sold millions of acres to foreign governments, foreign lands. And they're owned by Italy. They're in my area, there's million-acre farms around. I know two of them, matter of fact. I don't know if they're under the same departments that we are as far as growing crops and what, how we do it and everything else in the United States. But they sell these things out to foreign governments, and I'm not sure how they go about, you know, using the chemicals or whatever they're doing. So do you know anything about that?
Yes. I mean, when you have a land system that says you have full rights to ownership if you can buy it, who's going to buy it? Who's going to buy the most of it? The big money people, no matter where they live, no matter what country, will get more and more and more. Now, there is an important taxation policy key that I've been working on for decades, and there's a worldwide movement for it, and we need a lot more people working with us that says, what can local people do to begin with, along with enforcement of some kind of environmental regulations? And we know EPA and Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection has been very lax in enforcing environmental policy, so it's coming on the shoulders of the local people to find, whether it's common law courts or some way to use to use what we have of our rights to have environmental laws enforced. Two is taxation that's not on workers' shoulders. Don't tax work if you want people to work and you need more jobs, and not on production, especially on production of our human basic needs. Why tax these good things? Take the taxes off of that. And instead what we could shift it onto is the value of land. Now, obviously those with the most land and the most valuable land will be the ones who have to pay the most taxes. So it doesn't matter who owns it, whether it's owned by a big local landowner or somebody out of state or somebody from China, a corporation from China, is that they need to pay taxes for the land which they hold. And that goes back, well, that goes back to Thomas Paine, who says every landowner owes a ground rent to the community for the land which he holds. And this is a perennial wisdom teaching that we've discovered goes back, if you can believe this, it's a whole book about it I found, 10,000 years. If you go back to the Indus River Valley in what is now Western India, you will see that there was this form of taxation policy when there was a balanced, harmonic, quality society. And then when you look at it through centuries and centuries in China, when there is fair land access, fair land tenure, you have balanced, harmonic societies, often with gender balance, male-female balance in powers as well. When a few start to own and control, usually through force, warfare, winning conflicts and battles over land. When a few consolidate the land and resources, you start to have social breakdown, poverty, the kind of prison systems, continued war, kind of what we're seeing today, the homelessness and the hunger, as we saw then fast forward in the 1800s in Ireland, in the potato famines, when Ireland, the big landowners, had consolidated the land. They were actually exporting food out of Ireland while millions of people were starving. So such is the importance of the basic how we hold the land tenure system. And it's got to come to the fore, because everything, just look around where you are right there in your radio program room and where I'm here, everything you look at, have a thought, it all comes from the 10 fingers working on the land and resource base. And on all the complexity of technology and everything else, it is really still on that base of the human relationships to the earth, land, and resources. If that relationship is not set up on fairness and justice, everything else we do on top of it gets distorted, and the power grows in the hands of a few who really like power and control. So it's pretty deep to look at in this framework and look at it over thousands of years. And like I say, I've come to see that there is a perennial wisdom teaching around basic guidelines of the essential importance of fairly sharing the earth, land, and resources. The rise and fall of civilization depends on fairly sharing the resources. And I'm always very happy when I see signs of movement based on this understanding, as there is now a movement to get farms for veterans, farms for people who've served. What do you have if you come home and you don't get a job? Well, we've seen too many military people homeless and in the streets. This has been just a horrible catastrophe, great injustice. So the veterans getting behind this land rights movement, that if you don't have a decent job, you should have a right to farm some land somewhere. We have enough land that we could allocate it fairly for those who would like to have small, organic, beautiful new farms.
I mean, there's so much capability. I mean, if you've got a small farm and you got vegetables, you got a fruit crop, whatever, you can pretty much get sustainment, obviously, you know, if you have some cattle or pigs or whatever, and everything has worked together. Because I found it very interesting when I talked to this standard farmer who's been farming for many years, family farm, you don't find any of these problems with the waste problems that they have. You don't find the disease problems, because everything was kept under control, because, again, the amount of space that it's, you know, designated for working in the area, and then they're all taken care of. Because when I look at some around us where we got the feedlots or whatever, there's, I mean, you've got 1,000 head on there, and there's no way they can clean it up and take care of it. And then when you get all these problems and all these confined animals, now you got all the antibiotics that have to be given for disease, for everything else, and then the incredible pollution.
Yeah.
I mean, the small creek that comes from this thing that goes on down in the big river, I mean, it's staggering, because from a small creek into a regional river, from the regional river into the Illinois, from the Illinois into the Mississippi, and bang, you've got the whole central United States.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, and in our watershed, it goes from where we are down the streams to Potomac River, out to Chesapeake Bay. So looking at it in terms of watersheds is really, really important in terms of a watershed being a bioregion and looking at all the flows there. We had a speaker at our forum. He was from Johns Hopkins University. They have a school for public health, a research center for public health, and they have done really important work in tracking the human disease now coming out of the pollutants and the pesticides, herbicides coming from factory farms, from the overuse of antibiotics, and you mentioned this, is making humans less able to have protection from antibiotics. So this is a huge, huge, huge issue around public health. And also the trucks that are bringing in, I think, in chickens and so on, traveling around our roads, there's infections that just come into the air air pollution from factory farms. And this they've shown is making people ill as well.
One of the significant problems.
Marines and sailors at Camp Lejeune several times a month in group therapy, and a lot of them are dealing with post-trauma. And we're trying to, you know, educate them in certain ways that they can improve their lives. And I ask them a question many times about what is your goal, what do you have, and some of them say nothing right now. And so we try to get them lined up with that. But every once in a while, I'll find one that wants to be a rancher, wants to be a farmer, things like this. And I'll ask them, do they know anything about it? And they say, well, not really. And so I said, okay, you've got a couple of years before you get out of the Marine Corps, so you need to start going online. You need to be educated on certain things like conservation, land management, business, all these things to be a productive farmer. It takes more than just putting stuff in the ground. You need to learn a lot of ways. But it is about what you've been talking about. It's about becoming educated. It's one thing to have a garden, but it's another thing to have a very healthy environment there. And then you've got healthy crops coming off. It's a beautiful thing to us as veterans, because we've killed enough things in our lives. We want to make something beautiful. And I think
right.
It's a good, positive thing for veterans to do.
Absolutely. It's psychologically and spiritually healing directly, seeing things grow, encouraging things to grow, working with nature. So it's like so helpful and healing on many, many levels. And when you think of a farm, a micro farm, like I think Doug mentioned too, a micro farm is maybe two and a half acres is a hectare. 2.5 to 3 acres can support a family. People in the city could come together with other friends, and they could buy small farms and form community land trusts and ecological villages. So you're right. Your basic food needs can be met on a smaller area of land. If you can get out from under by some cooperation, and if you can get out from under paying rent and mortgage, the sooner the better, then you don't have that outflow. We have in our community a man who has a zero energy house. It's not a little house. It's a fairly big house, and he's managed to insulate it and have solar that he has no energy bill at all. And so small houses built very efficiently that can conserve energy. There is a growing tiny house movement you probably heard of, where homeless people, the one I'm thinking of is in Oregon, they have some land where they're allowed to live there for 2 years. They formed a tiny house community, and they're loving living in community in this way so much that their dream is to have long-term perennial secure land tenure. So, hey, that's a answer to landless homelessness right there. Give people their rights to a bit of earth, one way or the other. If it's a charity, don't just keep sending food. Do that in an emergency, but have a charity start buying some land and putting it into community land trust for people as we simultaneously work for taxation policy that's going to take the profiteering and speculation and land hoarding out of the land tenure system, which is what Big Picture, my movement, works for.
Yeah, that's one
so
area.
So both the direct
really...
land access is a human right, and then having the macroeconomics and public finance policy based on human rights to land and resources, as Thomas Paine and others were so clear about.
I usually talk to them on an individual basis about their goals, but I've never considered the community type you're talking about, of having them maybe several buddies or something, people they love being with, and some of these former veterans that they've served with, maybe even having a community of farms, and they would probably be a little more power in number sometimes, and creating your own energy and things like that. That's a great idea.
Oh, absolutely. The cooperation. I mean, in a natural, wholesome, healthy, just society, it would be cooperation, not this cutthroat competition that we have now, where our resumes are like, we create resumes to make us look better than somebody else so we can get the top jobs. Just let that end and build cooperative communities. And the models are there. People are living like that now. In the 40s, in fact, during World War II, Ralph Bersodi and others formed the School of Living Community Land Trust. And that has several land areas in communities right now. The D.F. Schumacher Society formed Community Land Trust. So there's throughout the country people living rurally in community land trusts, and many of them are looking for more people to come join them. And then there's the Global Ecological Village Movement, just a beautiful, high-spirited, optimistic movement of people forming eco-villages all around the world based on triple bottom line of environment, ethics, not just economic profit. And their website is really a must-visit, Global Eco-Village Network, I think it's gen.org. I just got a really beautiful magazine from them. Then in terms of learning these things, there's something called wolfing. It's willing workers on organic farms. So there's networks of organic farmers that welcome people to come and do a few hours of work a day on their organic farm in exchange for room and board. So essentially you can learn organic skills, you can travel around the country or even the world a bit, and all you really need is how to get from one place to the other, because when you're there, your basic needs are going to be provided for. There's the permaculture movement around the world, beautiful movement, how to live in a permanent culture or with permanent agriculture. Right. There's just so much. And I think it's connecting the dots and showing people there is a way forward. And if people can just start getting out of from under paying these huge rents in the urban areas, it's just draining them. And instead, like, find a way to not have to pay rent so you can save up some money for a bit so you can make this transition. You know, I think Doug said in his area, and I know in my area, even in my area of Pennsylvania, more so going east around Lancaster, we've had the Amish people. We all know about the Amish. They're looking pretty smart at this point because they farm in their traditional ways in centuries, and you can believe it, their basic needs are met, are well met. They are secure in their basic needs and how they've been farming on their small farms.
Yeah, we have a lot of Amish just south of where I live here in the Arcola, Tuscola area of Illinois, and they're incredible people, incredible farming. And then, I mean, a lot of the furniture in my house came from Amish where they're not only doing the farming, but then they have a wood shop right there.
Yeah.
And so they're doing incredible work.
Yeah, value added, your wood shop, and you can start making. You've got a little land and you have space. I remember when I'm from where I live now in Pennsylvania. I'm from this small town area, rural area, but I lived in cities for 25 years. And the contrast, I realized that if you're living in a city, you don't even have space to have a workshop or a woodshed or, you know, anything where you can do crafts and make stuff. You're so crammed into a tiny space. But once you have some breathing space, real room, then you can start using your hands and making things. Doesn't take a lot of land, but it does take some. And so when I moved here in my rural neighborhood, I was working a little bit for a newspaper, and I did a story on interesting things people did in their backyard and in their garages and in their wood shops, all kinds of interesting things they were doing. Now, this begins to form when it gets a little more organized, a basis for local-based economy. It's people defining what they can make locally and then exchanging it in some way. And you can use time banking. It's software that allows you to just keep track of who's contributing what in terms of time dollars. And then it's a way of having exchange without having to have hard currency, which is another problem. There's lots of good things people want to do, but where's the money? How do they make money? Money is just a way to track exchange. That's what it should be used for. It simply should be seen as a public utility that utilizes something easier than barter, more efficient than barter, for humans to exchange goods and services. So the local-based economy with secure land, tenure land access, and then a cooperative mechanism of exchange of goods and services are two keys to our rebuilding our local economies out from under this corporate oligarchical rule that is just crushing us. It's just going to continue to crush us. But there's a phrase, remember, Star Wars Princess Leia said at one point, the tighter he squeezes, referring to Darth Vader, the tighter he squeezes his fist, the faster star systems flee between his fingers. And we're certainly being squeezed, and that's going to got to make us just move faster to create the new society.
One of the things we've talked about before and have been a major theme of Warrior Connection is the health and environmental effects of military contamination. I mean, not too far from you. I mean, you had Three Mile Island right there, the Army War College. You got Chesapeake Bay. At the head of Chesapeake Bay, which not everybody understands, you and I have discussed it and we've tried to clean it up, is Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Picatinny. I mean, you've got some of the worst contamination ever generated from the U.S. military is at the prime headwaters of the Chesapeake Bay, and then all the seafood and the, I don't know, it just comes out of that stuff. I mean, the contamination out there is staggering. So when you look at the health and environmental effects around that area, I mean, the health effects on the population has been staggering about all imagination, because a little dab will do you, and when you put a little dab and a little dab is synergistic in nature, and the next thing you know, the contamination is overriding everything you have.
I think what you're pointing to is, in my area, but also worldwide, isn't it true that the U.S. military is the biggest polluter on the planet?
Well, sure. I mean, it is with depleted uranium and everything else and all the other things that they've done, and then shipping all the chemical biological weapons all over to all the other nations.
Right.
I mean, it's been a staggering, staggering problem.
Right. This is why Warrior Connection and what you guys are doing is so very important. And we're also, my Franklin County, where I live, we have Letterkenny Army Depot, Doug. And I can just drive over there and I can see acres and acres of the Jeeps that were used in Iraq. You know, they refurbish these things there. They do all kinds of things there. And I know that we have a bit higher than average cancer in our area as well. And I suspect it has something to do with the two Superfund sites that have been at Letterkenny. And I know they've been trying to remediate those. And then I'm about 40 miles from Fort Detrick. You mentioned the bioweapons and the biological warfare. That's where that stuff's been made, Fort Detrick, right? So all of this, my goodness, as soldiers and military people who want to serve their country get to see this, that it's all under the thumb of the few who want more power and control for themselves, what we might call the neocon or the so-called liberal interventionist agenda. It's to use that motive and that heartfelt feeling of courage and protection to protect the earth and to protect the people, and to twofold. We have to know our no and our yes, to stand against what is wrong, and to then stand for and point the way forward to the direction that we want to go. And it takes strong and brave people to lead us forward. So there's a lot of healing to be done with people returning from the wars. You know that, and you're in the process of that yourself. And part of that healing is often finding a life purpose. It helps move us along. People with life purpose can grow stronger, and that can help heal the body.
I remember one day when I was with you there for the short week where there, you and I, we took a trip and we went over to the main battlefield over there at Gettysburg to meet some other friends there and walk around. And the feeling that you have there, there's something staggering about the feeling. And then you look at the serene farming terrain around there, but then you think about, oh, my God, what was the contamination and what's there and what's still there? I mean, you're sitting there looking at the battlefield. Eisenhower's farm is basically on the south end of the battlefield.
Right.
And then all of the contamination that spread. And I guess one thing that I didn't understand until I spent time with you is you think on the East Coast, you think of big cities and everything. You live in a very rural area. I mean, you've got a small farm there where you live on. You've got horses out your back door, you know, across the way. And so the open areas and the open lands, are they available for everybody to farm or do, you know, agriculture, what do they want to do on it? And it's just a matter of how do we get the people educated, how do we get the people informed, how do we get the resources to them so they can do it? Because I think today's society, the self-sustainment, the ability of individuals to take care of themselves, whether they're doing farming or they're doing plumbing or electrical work, has gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, our generation was the last one where I think the generation the three of us are in was the last one where we really learned that under our parents.
Yes.
Last Friday, I was doing a book signing in Durham, VA. It's one of the major, I guess it is a major VA hospital in North Carolina. And I had a young man with me that was getting ready to go in the Marine Corps next month. He's going to boot camp. And he was helping me with a book signing, and I was almost embarrassed by the so many problems these veterans have, not only war wounds, but also they've got a lot of contamination, a lot of things they picked up in a lot of different places. And to look at that, I think it would almost be a negative as far as someone going into the military, because we are being affected by so many things. They come back with irritable bowel syndrome, or they come back with wounds from contamination and things like that. They're not even checking them hardly anymore. Coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, I know Doug talks about the land will be contaminated for thousands of years or maybe a million years. And why aren't they still checking them for that?
Well, because here's something I got from Doug when he was here with me. He said, Alana, don't you understand they don't care?
No, they don't.
Doug, you kept saying that, you know, and I got it. Because people like us think, because we care, we think that we just tell the people, hey, there's a problem. There's a problem. People are being hurt. People are getting sick. That they're going to care and they're going to do something. But, Doug, you're right. They don't care. They don't have the psychology to care. They're not like people who care. They've really been, there's really some pathology in their minds and hearts and souls. And so think that they're going to care is forget it. We, the people who care, have to become the leaders. We have to become the power, the good power, the goodwill. It's goodwill. It's not bad will. It's goodwill towards all. That's what we've got to do now. And so when we see young men who feel like they don't have another option, this is why having the land as an option. And, you know, in India under Gandhi also, there was Vinoba Bhave. And what he did was very simple. He went around to the big landowners, and he begged land for the poor people so the poor people could have some land, and he actually succeeded in getting some land that way. So anybody who says they support veterans and have 100, 200 acres of land and are not really doing with it anything or much of it, let's get them to say, okay, you support veterans? Put some of your property into a community land trust so veterans can farm, direct land access, show that you care. And believe me, there's a lot of people that I call my little place a hobby farm. It's 3 acres, and we pretty well utilize it. But I know people with 50, with 200 acres, they're just playing with it. It's just their retreat, you know? These are good people. So I think they should get the idea that part of their responsibility is sharing their surplus, which means letting others have some land access.
That's good. Yeah.
I know in our area, one thing we do is everything start coming in. I mean, we've been sharing strawberries and everything, whatever crops up, we'll grow something on one farm and another neighbor will grow something. And so in our rural area, I mean, we're sharing our veggies and sharing the crops that we grow all the time. Obviously, we've got our main crops, corn and soybeans, which, you know, goes to the market.
Yeah.
But the other idea of sharing the resources that we have as far as the vegetables and the fruit that we can grow, again, you're talking about just your backyard garden. I mean, it's just
an
incredible difference. Because I know when I grew up, we had a garden, and my dad had a garden and orchard, and we've always had one here. And it was incredible the amount of money that we saved that could then go to other things because we were growing our own.
Yeah.
And then getting out involved with nature and seeing everything. I mean, as you said over and over again, and this has been your theme forever, that healing and that spirituality that comes from working the earth is just beyond anything imaginable.
Right. Right. So let's make opportunities. And I'll say right here and now, if you connect me with veterans who want to spend a little bit of time here at my place, I have a backyard camper trailer that I'm happy to share. People want to spend time here now and then so they get a sense of it. And if more of us are welcoming like that, we can start really keeping the healing movement going. And as you said, this is really good news. It's simple. We teach our children to share. But once I looked up sharing on the internet, all I found was lessons to children, not to adults. So it's about adult sharing, and you're doing that there. That's really good news. There is an organization based in London I came across some years ago. In fact, they really liked my book and endorsed it. And it's called Share the World's Resources. And that's the theme they just keep putting out. Let's share. I mean, let's share what we have. If we share what we have, more needs are met. And more people get to interact and support each other. I mean, it's basic human solidarity. Is sharing. Even somebody who doesn't have much stuff has something to share. Even it's an important story about their life, because every life is valuable. So everybody has something they can share, something interesting of value.
They have something called Veterans Organic Garden Therapy, and they bring veterans in. I live in a high military area. And bring veterans in and teach them how to farm, how to garden. And I think what you just said, that's a positive thing that people can do. They feel like they can't do anything. There is things you can do.
And if you hear of that movement, or if I can help build that in my area of South Central PA, let me know. Because I've been dreaming about having more of an active role myself in veterans' rights to land and farming and gardening and so on.
Well, make sure you give us your email or your website or anything you have so we can get it back with you.
Oh, happy to do so.
Alana,
you want me to give it right now? Do you want me to give it out right now, or do you want Doug to give it to you?
Well, we'll give it out again at the end of the show in a few minutes.
Okay.
You ran for Congress. Obviously, we're in the presidential campaign, and
yeah.
This is all crucial, how it's all going to direct. I mean, you know, you and I both know and worked with Bernie Sanders in the past.
Oh,
and
yeah,
we've
Bernie.
Had some interesting experience with Hillary. And what are your thoughts? I mean, you've ran for Congress. I mean, you were a serious candidate, and you've got an insight in Washington and everything else, what's going on. You've worked with these people. What insight can you share with the veterans or anything?
Well, let's see. First of all, yeah, it was a serious campaign in 2014 as a Democratic Party run for Congress in an area that I don't think has had a Democrat for about 80 years. I probably had the lowest campaign budget of anybody in the country, and still got 36.5% of the vote, which wasn't too bad, and we were all a bunch of amateur volunteers, you know. I don't know that the powers that be are going to easily let the people that we want be in office. They're always finding ways to get the people they want in office. I don't have too much hope on the national level for either of the presidential candidates leading the way forward in the direction we need to go, in all honesty. Email I just got today was titled Horror versus Horror.
I agree.
Hillary versus Trump. So hopefully, I mean, Bernie will keep leading his people's revolution. Dennis Kucinich is still out there fighting. We have leaders that aren't in office that are there, and we need to all be working together. And again, you asked what, I think your question was about thoughts for veterans in terms of politics. It's get involved locally where the power is. Get people elected locally that you agree are people that you want support. Don't look at the party. Don't look at Democrat, Republican. Look at the person and look at the policies that the person supports. So real grassroots politics is, I think, what's going to turn it around, probably combined with local direct action, and then all of these people's movements well networked, so that we can come forward and a nonviolent force for essentially a peace and justice world.
Yeah, both Dennis Kucinich and obviously Bernie Sanders, I mean, two heroes of both you and I. I mean, they're probably the leaders in our Congress. Or, you know, I mean, Bernie is now in the Senate running for president. Dennis was in the House. Those are the two probably greatest champions for veterans in our nation going back for 25 years that I know of. You can't
well,
get
we got a new one,
two.
Doug. Have you been following Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii? Ah, Tulsi Gabbard. She served in Iraq, I think, 3 times. She was on the medical team. She's a House of Representatives. She's a congresswoman from Hawaii, and she's only about 35 years old. And she's absolutely stunning in her clarity and her real support for veterans and service people, which in her book means you don't go on endless, needless wars of intervention. She quit the Democratic National Committee because of their support for Hillary so that she could then fully work for Bernie. And there's wonderful YouTube videos of Tulsi Gabbard, G-A-B-B-A-R-D, Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, that you're going to be very inspired to watch.
Yeah, no, I still keep in touch with Cynthia McKinney. I got to work with her when she was in the House and was an incredible individual. I mean, this is a whole different group.
Right. Right. People, those are the ones, yeah, that with courage stood up and stood on their truth. And of course, they found ways to get them out of office, but that just shows what we're up against. But Cynthia McKinney, absolutely. Great, great warrior for peace.
Yeah, these are just absolutely incredible people. I knew when Dennis was running for president, we did a presidential debate here at the University of Illinois, and obviously I was involved in a press conference, and my grandson was like, I think, 6 months old, and he took the Dennis like he was his grandfather, and I knew right then and there, hey, this is a great guy, because when you got a baby that takes him like his grandfather, you know you got good people. And Dennis proved that all the way around.
The vibes. That's a good sign. You know, Dennis being from Cleveland, and he greatly admired Tom Johnson, who was the mayor that put in the public utilities, and Dennis as a boy mayor, right, when he was mayor decades ago, had to fight to keep those public utilities from being privatized. You probably know all about that story. And the great mentor, I mean, Tom Johnson is, Dennis is very inspired by that former mayor, but Tom Johnson himself was very inspired by Henry George, whose teachings of political economics inspired me decades ago. And I wrote to Dennis. I had met him once in his office also and had good conversation, and I knew he had some understanding of Henry George. Someone had done a radio interview, print interview with Dennis and mentioned Tom Johnson. So I wrote to Dennis and I said, but do you recall the inspiration of Tom Johnson was Henry George? And this was about mid-December. Dennis called me one evening to thank me so much for reminding him about the importance of the great American political economist Henry George. And he just kept thanking me over and over again. It was wonderful.
Well, we're getting towards the end of the show here.
To work with him, huh?
We're getting towards the end of the show. How do people get a hold of your books that you've written and other information?
Well, Earthrights, earthrights.net. In the publication section is where on the top of the list, I think, is my Earth Belongs to Everyone book in PDF and a number of other of my articles and colleagues of mine articles, earthrights.net. Go into the publications article section. We have another EarthRightsInstitute.org website that co-director Anna Gecki maintains, and she focuses a lot on sustainable communities. I'm also as administrative director of the International Union for Land Value Taxation. You can learn about that at theiu.org, theiu.org. You'll be able to view videos and other things there, and you can join the IU for free and get our newsletters and so on. And then please, if people want to directly communicate to work with me, my email address is my first name, Alanna, A-L-A-N-N-A, at CenturyLink.net. Alanna at CenturyLink.net.
Oh, that's wonderful. As we wind down the last few minutes, I mean, do you like to summarize anything on what your hopes and your dreams are as far as, you know, the sustainable agriculture, the sustainable interaction?
Well, let's see. The sustainable agriculture, just do it. I mean, support your community-supported agriculture and your farmers' markets, and start getting a mental map of who's doing what where that's good, positive for the environment and for people, and then be aware of areas that we might call person, planet, pain, to draw attention to the problem areas where we might want to have stands and protests. So it's a focus on both the no and the yes, and to keep connecting with neighbors and community, keep conversations going, keep finding ways to share and cooperate, and to make safe spaces for conversation. When I ran for Congress, I realized there weren't enough safe spaces for people to even talk. And I've been found places where we're afraid because there were a bunch of Republicans in an area, the Democrats didn't even want to put up a sign because they might lose business or their friend neighbors would be hostile. That's pretty pathetic. So the safe space for us to talk about ideas and even issues that seem very divisive and emotional, we need the safe spaces in our communities to have these important conversations.
Lana, I wanted to thank you for being with us today, and you've really inspired me. And I remember somebody saying one time they had 20 participants in something they were doing, and the thought came to me, what could you do with 20 matches? And the idea was, on the right day with the wind just right and the humidity just right, you could burn a city down with 20 matches. What could you do with 20 people on fire? And you can start a movement, really. And I appreciate you coming on today. I was part of it, and that was a great honor for me.
Well, absolutely. And Mutual, thank you ever so much for having me on. And let's keep a growing connection and working together and supporting each other. So I appreciate Warrior Connection very much. Thanks for what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. Ray, it's been an interesting time again. Memorial Day went on by. I know one thing that, as we kind of wrap up here in the last minute or so, I don't know if anybody's had done it. I got a hold of this DVD series called Army Wives. It has been an incredible program to watch. If anybody hadn't seen it, it's something that I highly recommend because it ties everything together, what the families have gone through. The part I've been watching right now is the struggle with TBI and all the health effects and the fact that you don't have a visible wound or an injury, but yet you're definitely wounded down deep in the soul and you can't function on a daily basis. And how do you recover? Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like, and a lot of what we've just talked about, agriculture, mm-hmm. and doing farming, getting out there and putting the gardens in, working with your fruit trees, getting some animals, some horses, boy, that can really lead to a wonderful life.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Yes.
My wife and I have started juicing again, and now I drink I don't know how much it is exactly, a pint or even a quart of carrot juice a day. So, you just start to get living healthier. You start getting things in your body that you need instead of things you really don't.
Well, thank you both very much. Thank you, Alanna, for coming on. We'll have the information up. Again, we're going to continue our conversation. Hopefully next week we're going to have another conversation continuing on family get-togetherness and therapy and everything else what we can do. God bless you, and thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alanna. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.